Is he my prince? Is he the toad? Waiting, wondering, is getting too old. I'm gonna let down my hair, slide up my skirt. Welcome to the Shame-Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame-Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
Shame-Free Zone. It's Monday evening, and this is your host, Veronica Monet. My guest tonight is Mikhail Newby. She is a kink-friendly relationship coach, sexuality educator, and she specializes in alternative relationship styles, such as multiple partner relationships. She works with couples and singles and helps them with their relationships. It's not a little bit like my job description here. And she's actually located in Portland, Oregon. I met her up there actually in February when I was doing an event at Club Sesso, and she helped organize that for me. She's got a book out called My Erotic Adventure. Actually, I'm looking at the imprint on this. Mikhail, welcome to the Shame-Free Zone.
Hi there.
Hi there.
Great to be here.
So this book is pretty new, and it came out in 2009. And
very end of the year.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're not originally from Portland, are you?
No, I'm not. I was actually born and raised in Cleveland, Ohio.
Well,
and I spent about...
That's actually more conservative, isn't it?
Yeah. You know? And then I moved to Washington, D.C. after a while. So I spent about 10 and a half years in D.C.,
okay.
And I did not know that, but I was very blessed to find out that Washington, D.C. has a very, very strong alternative sexuality community.
Well, I didn't know that either, to tell you the truth. That's interesting.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
does Portland, doesn't it? I mean, I was actually kind of shocked about Portland. People seemed pretty open, friendly. Didn't have a lot of charge around their sexuality, or at least that's how it appeared to me. What's your experience been of it?
Yeah, Portland is a very open-minded place, and I've been here for, let's say, about a year and a half now. And one of the things, I moved here to be with the man who is now my husband. I did not realize when I was moving to Portland that it would be the perfect place to be an alternative sexuality relationship coach. I didn't realize that Portland has a very strong, not only a kink community, but also a swinging and poly community, also a very strong tantra community, and a lot of gender queering and gender out community as well. So it's really a wonderful place.
I grew up in Portland. I was born in Oregon, and we lived in Portland for quite a few years when I was a child. And then just on the outskirts of Portland too, in a little community called Carlton. So I left the state when I was 18. I have no clue about what's going on sexually in the state. It could have been that way back then. I kind of doubt it though. What do you think? Is there an influx from Seattle, perhaps? I know we've got a lot of sex positive community up in Seattle.
I'm not sure that I've really been here long enough to know, in that when I first got here, I was primarily focused on networking within the swinging community and then branching out into poly. And even after being here a year and a half, I am just now really starting to reach out and network into the kink community as well. So I'm not sure where it all comes from, but everyone that I've talked to from this area says, well, it's just part of our, you know, it's the West Coast vibe. We're very open-minded and freewheeling, and just independent. You know, it's the spirit that conquered the West, right? That independent spirit. So,
Well, I,
but we can blame it on Lewis and Clark, you know.
Right. I know. I was actually really caught off guard. Club Sesso, as you know, is owned by Ron Jeremy, a very iconic porn star. And I went to cash my check from doing the workshop there. And I walk into a bank, and the guy behind the counter says, "Oh, my wife and I are members there."
That's great.
And he didn't whisper it. He was just like, "Oh, that's great. I know you. What kind of a workshop are you teaching there? My wife and I are members there." And I was like, that's not usually something even in Northern California that I'm used to a married human being admitting at work. Without at least turning a few shades of pink or whispering or something, you know. So that
we
was,
are a different place.
Yeah, yeah. I was very impressed. I was like, wow, this is very.
I'm definitely trying to promote that with all of the public interactions that I have. I had a lot of fun recently shopping for supplies for a workshop on risk aware sex and purchasing Snap tape at a fabric store because it's great to use with female condoms.
Wow.
And because that's a great way, you tie it around the crease of your thighs and then open up the snaps and snap the latex barrier into place and holds it in place. Fabulous. Of course, the lady behind the counter says, "Isn't this great stuff? What are you getting it for?" And I said, "Well, doing a workshop on safe sex." She says, "Oh, that's great. Have a good day." But, you know, it's so much fun. I love those little opportunities to just be completely straight about it with no embarrassment and no shame. And what I find is that most people, when approached with that kind of open attitude, are very receptive. And more often than not, they ask more questions.
Right. Now, you said Portland is a perfect place for you as a kink-friendly relationship coach. And why is that? What were you referring to?
Specifically in that there is such a sizable community here. There is a club such as Club Sesso. They have a very similar mission to mine, which is really to promote that all people are free to live the intimate relationships that inspire them. And if that's celibacy or monogamy, that's great. And if that's poly, and if that's dominance and submission, you know, it's like really whatever floats your boat, or as Dan Savage would say, lifts your luggage, and it's consensual between two adults, I'm all behind it, and they are too, and they really want to promote education. It's not everywhere that I could move and be able to partner with a club that has such a membership who's as committed to education. So it was great from that level. And then also that Portland has a very established polyamory community and the established tantra community. So there's lots of avenues for education and for inquiry that's available here, and lots of people to work with.
So, Mikhail, do you happen to have some online resources or websites that we could actually refer the listeners to in case they are headed up to Portland for poly and kink and tantra?
Gosh, goodness. Let's see. Well, I can say that on my website, which is mmikhailnewby.com, I have a whole section that's full of links. Are there any links for poly? Up in this area, there are a lot of meetups. So even before I moved into Portland, I had already joined several meetup groups so that I knew where there were going to be people of like mind meeting that or gathering that I could come and get to know some of them.
Right.
And there are several poly meetups. There's also several poly groups and of course, kink groups on FetLife. FetLife is one of my favorite resources. And then Club Sesso, of course, for anyone who's interested in swinging, Club Sesso and their website is a great resource.
So, okay. Yeah, I just, FetLife I'm familiar with, and Club Sesso too. Okay, so it sounds like the poly community is probably, what is that term that they use when they get together to have something to eat and meet? Is it?
Oh, it's kind of like a munch.
It's not
kinky.
Right. I actually had somebody contact me and go, what's a munch? They thought maybe it was some new sex act.
No.
So just to clarify, if you're invited to a polyamorous munch, what is it?
Well, mostly you will hear the term munch involved in the kink and BDSM community. And essentially, it's like a happy hour, except it could happen later in the evening, perhaps. It's just an opportunity for the kink community or those who are interested in kink to get together and kind of meet each other in one particular environment. So we're meeting at this bar at this between this time and this time. Come on in and look around and start introducing yourself, and chances are that a lot of people there are part of that community. If it were invited to, one were invited to something called a poly munch, which I'm not sure I've ever heard, but were that to come up, it would be the same thing, just a gathering of polyamorous or poly-curious community who want to meet each other and, you know, share notes and ideas and laugh a little bit and enjoy life.
Yeah, and I think I stand corrected. I think it is the kinky community that that term munch. And just to clarify, it's not like they're going to chew off your leg or munch carpet.
Oh, no.
We're talking about getting together for a potluck, basically, or to eat
exactly.
something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Some of them happen at restaurants and they happen over a meal. I had brunch munches. Into dinner munches. Some
brunch
of them are
munches.
Wine munches.
Okay.
Yes, the brunch munch. That's always a fun one.
Now, you are the program director for Club Sesso.
I'm part of a team.
I'm looking at Kink Academy.
Yeah, fun.
Yeah, and I'm just now full-bodied fellatio. Is that a class that you're teaching, or is that...
That is, full-bodied fellatio is one of my workshops. I actually taught it at Club Sesso yesterday. We had something between probably about 40 to 45, I think we had about 45 people present, and it was just so much fun. It's wonderful. I'm actually now, my next workshop coming up is an oral sex workshop, so I now have to include cunnilingus, so I'm brushing up my skills and doing extra research.
Oh, are you now?
Both topics.
I would think you probably have done lots of research already, but
a certain amount.
So
you know, but just because you're good at it in the field doesn't necessarily mean you can teach it.
No, that's absolutely true. So let's talk a little bit about full-bodied fellatio. First of all, like, what is the concept behind that?
You know, the concept really is that we think of blowjobs, but blowjobs are not only mouth, lips, tongue. They're actually blowjobs, including hand jobs. There's eye contact. There's the sounds you make. There's your level of communication. There's the anticipation that you build. There's not only those elements, there's also so many different techniques involved, and then what about anal play, and then what about sloppy blowjobs? So when I say full-bodied fellatio, I mean stimulating your partner's entire senses. It's not just about the dick.
Okay, and what do you mean by a sloppy BJ?
Oh, totally fun. All right, so a sloppy blowjob starts off like any other blowjob, except then we're going to add a lot more spitting and slurping, and really just you don't swallow. You just spit a lot. And it's getting messy. And a lot of what I find is that a lot of us have been raised with ladies don't spit.
Uh-huh.
Ladies are neat and clean and tidy, but that's not necessarily the hottest thing possible when you're doing a blowjob. And so if that's something that your partner is into, and I always recommend check with him first, because if you're nervous about it and you get your nerve up and you're like, okay, I'm ready to do this, I'm going to do this, and then you spit and he goes, ew, you might want to check with him first. Is this something he's interested in? But if he is, then you can work yourself through making it safe to actually spit and get over being tidy and allow yourself to get messy and have a lot of fun. And some men really, really love it.
Huh.
I will say that my favorite scene that I wrote in my book is actually a pirate role play sloppy blowjob scene. Pirate role play sloppy blowjob scene. Yep.
Speaking of your book now, it's a couple hundred pages long, and you've got a lot of erotic stories in here. They seem to be very broad in scope. So are these all fantasies, or have you lived these out?
Good question. I will say that these are fantasies, and they are fictions. They are just imagined within my head, but also based on my own personal experience. So, for example, you know, did I ever have a scene with someone named Tasha and someone named... No, I didn't. But do I have personal experience with a lot of these fabulous, sexy, raunchy, erotic moments? Yes, I do. And that's one thing I would say that I also bring to my experience as a relationship coach, is that I actually discovered the world of alternative sexuality through BDSM and kink in 2003. And I, before then, felt like there was something wrong with me. And my relationships, there was something, some sort of connection that I was trying to get, but I just couldn't get it, and I couldn't even say what it was until I discovered BDSM and actually realized, oh, I'm not broken, I'm just submissive. And there are actually people out there who are the other side of submissive, which is dominant. So there's not only nothing wrong with me, there are people who would make great partners for me if I just know that that's what I want to seek out. And there's also a whole community of support. Then my response was, why didn't anyone tell me this? How did I get to be 33 years old? No one told me that there were other ways that one could love and have sex and have relationships and enjoy and experience passion, and that those were all valid. And that's actually what took me to being a relationship coach, was my commitment that other people also know that there's nothing wrong with them and they're not broken.
So, you know, listening to you and your personality, I don't think a lot of people would assume that you were submissive.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you have a pretty forceful presence. What can you explain that for the listeners, just how somebody could be submissive sexually or submissive in a lifestyle fashion, or submissive personality-wise, and how those differ and are not always, they don't always travel together.
Sure. I of course have to say that I'm mostly speaking from my own experience, and every single person is different, and everyone's going to have a different definition of how they work and a different understanding of themselves. For me, I can say that I am very, very in charge, very on top of things as much as possible within my personal and professional life. I'm fairly organized. I love bringing order to chaos, and I'm a very powerful personality. On the other side, sexually, and again, it's not with every single partner. There's a certain dynamic with a certain partner who is dominant in a certain way, where for me, it is such a blessing to give up control. I have so much control during my daily life that to be able to give that over to someone else who willingly takes charge, who I trust and respect and am willing to give that kind of power over me, is such a gift. Now, one of the things I'll offer is that if people have any experience with partner dancing, like waltz, foxtrot, cha-cha, salsa, things of that sort.
Real dancing, in other words.
Right, except not like just I'm out in a club shaking my stuff dancing, but actually dancing with a partner. Partner dancing is a form of dominance and submission. The leader is dominant. They are in control. They are the ones who decide what moves happen next. The follower is the submissive partner. They simply follow. He says, move this way, I move that way. He says, do this, I do that. And it's a very clear dominant and submissive role. So it's interesting because I used to, I'm also a dance instructor, and I used to work with clients who were getting ready for their wedding. So couples who were preparing for their wedding dance. And it was amazing how many power dynamics would show up on the dance floor. Most often where all of a sudden he was supposed to be in charge and she did not know how to let go. She didn't know how to follow. Especially, you know, you take your average bride who's usually micromanaging putting together this whole wedding, and then you tell her, no, now for the next 4 minutes, you let him make all the decisions. It was fascinating to see that come up.
Anybody who's watched Bridezilla would know the absurdity of that, huh?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So it's very common for people who are very dominant in their daily lives to want to offload some of that, not have to be the responsible party in their sexual or erotic lives.
It's absolutely.
I also know people who are totally type A in their daily life and totally dominant in their sexual life as well. That's just the way they are. That is their way. So you can totally not judge the book by a cover. You never can. You always have to ask. And it could turn out anyway.
It's true. Now, tell us a little bit about people who actually are into kink as a lifestyle. Mm-hmm. How does that differ from somebody who is perhaps pursuing it recreate? I don't know what you would call it. Like, is it lifestyle versus recreational, or what's the correct terminology?
I would think what you might be referring to is like a 24/7 relationship. So there are people who are like me, where I don't really submit to. I'm not submissive to anyone in my business life, in my personal life. There's no one who is in charge of punishing me if I don't get my article published on time. You know, there's no one
right.
I am beholden to for that. I don't have a dominant that way. And so I may choose to play now and then with a dominant partner, but that's something that I do sporadically. It's not an all-the-time thing. There are also people who have what are referred to as 24/7, or also there are total power exchange relationships. And a 24/7 arrangement, these are very, very explicitly negotiated. I've never heard of anyone, and I wouldn't recommend that anyone walk into meeting someone and say, hey, okay, so 24 hours a day for 7 days a week for the next 3 months, here we go, I'll do whatever you want, and we're not going to talk about what that's going to look like or what that's going to involve or what the limits are. One of the things that is a very powerful tool that one can learn through reading about and learning about BDSM is negotiation and agreement, saying, I'm willing to give you this, and here's what I need in exchange for that. So, for example, I'm willing to submit to you sexually, and I will do anything that you want me to do sexually. And what I need in exchange is I need to be praised a lot. I'm a big praise person. Praise is my big payoff. So I want to be told how much I've pleased you, and I want to know that, you know. So that's an example of something that one could negotiate for. In a 24/7 relationship, one partner is dominant and one partner is submissive the entire time. And that's whether I'm out grocery shopping or whether I am in the house cooking or whether I am at work. I am at all times in a position of being submissive to the dominant partner.
Now, since you are a relationship coach, specifically a kinky relationship coach, what's your feelings about the propensity for a lifestyle or 24/7 relationship to actually lead to some forms of dysfunction? In other words, we do know that vanilla relationships can be abusive.
Mm-hmm.
So how does one safeguard against that?
Well, you use safe words, and again, you negotiate. One of the things that I see as a problem, I don't want to say problem, but I will say is so much a challenge in everyday average relationships. No one really teaches us how to have them and how to have them work. And we often think that we're on the same page as our partners without really getting clear about it. So, for example, I also do a lot of work with the swinging and the poly communities, so consensual non-monogamy communities. That's where I actually do a lot of work. And I see a lot of people step into relationships and never have a conversation about monogamy or non-monogamy. They just assume that they're going to be monogamous and that's the way it is. But if you haven't discussed it, how do you even know? And it's not even enough, really. Language is very inspecific. So it's not really enough to even say, yes, I would like to be monogamous. Well, okay, what does that mean to you? What does what for you would be construed cheating in that? You know, is if I have a female friend or a male friend, is that then cheating? Is that allowed? Is that break the rules of monogamy? Or, you know, if I have sex with them, what about oral sex? What about if sleepovers, but we don't do anything? What if we make out? Is that okay? What about heavy petting? There's actually so much conversation that's missing. And then people show up in a relationship and yikes, all of a sudden they find out they're on different pages, but it was never discussed in advance. This is one of the benefits of the BDSM lifestyle, again, is that these things are discussed in advance. I really can't speak to how much dysfunction may or may not be associated with the BDSM community. One of the resources I will give you is CARIS, which is the Community Academic Consortium for the Research of Alternative Sexualities, and their website is CARIS, CARAS, research.org, and they are an organization that is committed to supporting research on alternative sexualities because we have very, very little. We actually know very little about alternative communities.
And that was K-A-R-A-S?
Mm-hmm. Research.org.
.org.
Caris Research, research.org, yes.
Oh, research.org.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm wondering, are you familiar with some of the research that came out of Arizona on the effects on the health, physiological health of submissives?
No, I'm not. Do tell.
Oh, there was actually some positive, it's not just stress reduction, but changes in the blood levels that indicated kind of a restorative and healing effect on submissives. So it's it doesn't just feel good for some certain people. It actually can reset them and improve their health, which is counterintuitive for a lot of people.
Yeah. I can get that. It makes complete sense to me. I only know from my own personal experience that if that is something that one is drawn to, it can make a huge difference in one's life. And I'm of the opinion that whatever you're drawn to, finding, looking into that, exploring that, what's behind that, finding out what it is about yourself that feeds that. One of the things that I'll say is I'm also very service-focused. So I love being of service to other people. Hello, I'm a relationship coach. Of course I do. This is a way that I get that fulfilled in a non-sexual context.
Mm-hmm.
I ran a dental practice for 6.5 years. I loved it. Of all the jobs I've ever had, I loved it because I got to take care of people every day. It was wonderful, and it was very fulfilling for me. So we can look at what our interests are and what calls us sexually, and then look at what's underneath that, and are there ways that I can get that need fulfilled in other areas of my life as well?
Well, and what have you learned about yourself since you went into kink? What have you learned about yourself?
Oh. well, I had no idea that I was so very interested in taking care of people and serving people. I actually now apply that to my relationship with my husband, where I'm the one who makes the grocery lists, and I am the one who, you know, plans out our meals, and I do the majority of the cooking in the household. I do most of the laundry, and on some level, yeah, believe me, there's a part of me that's like, I shouldn't have to do all the work. But at the same time, when I serve him a meal, and I always he always eats before I do, because I want to see his reaction, and I love to be praised. So when I get a, oh my gosh, honey, this is so great, I just love it. It's wonderful. And I didn't know that that was something that was so important to me. And I wouldn't have realized that I actually need to have that in my relationship. Learning that I am so motivated by praise has really allowed me to get the support that I need. I might not, you know, I could be with a partner who doesn't naturally praise people, and I've had to say, look, it's really important to me that you tell me if you like something I've done. Now, knowing that about myself. Mm-hmm, go ahead.
So I have a question, because it sounds like if he's eating before you do, that almost sounds like a lifestyle arrangement. Am I wrong? Am I missing something?
Well, it's nothing that we've negotiated. It's nothing that he has demanded. It's simply something that I gladly give. So it's not an arrangement, because it's not a requirement.
Okay.
But it's just something that I've learned really fulfills me. I've also learned a lot about non-monogamy out since I entered the kink community. It's very common within the kink community for people to have play partners that they're not dating or engaged to or married to. You know, there may be no committed long-term relationship other than we are sexual play partners, or we're kink play partners. There are lots of ways that people play together within the world realm of kink that don't involve sex or penetration of any sort. And so that may be the way that people are together. So someone might have my husband, and then they also might have my play partner. And that's nothing that I had ever encountered in my previous monogamous travels. So being able to see the different ways in which people have relationships really started to open my eyes about, well, let me actually take a look. What interests me? You know, I had always, let's see, okay. I grew up with my father's Playboy and Penthouse forums.
I loved
reading them.
Where'd you find them? Were they under the bed?
No, they were under the socks.
Oh, I found them under the bed along with a Wee magazine that blew my mind, because it had some she-girls in it, she-males.
Ooh. Mm-hmm.
Or that's what they used to call them back then, transgender people. That I had never seen. I go, what was my dad looking at this stuff for?
Wow. I remember, I think I was maybe 12 or 14, and I got in a snit. And my mother said something I didn't like, and I shot back with, well, why does Dad have these magazines under the sock drawer? And my mom said, because I bought them for him. And I was like, what? That shut me up right away. I was like, oh, okay.
Go, Mom.
Yeah, all right. But I loved reading those. And there, so I grew up with this very active sexual imagination of multiple partners, and threesomes, and foursomes, and orgies, and kink, and, oh, okay, Anne Rice, pen name, A.N. Roquelaure, and the erotica that she wrote, okay, Exit to Eden was so dog-eared under my bed. I loved that book.
So now, are you one of the women who likes to masturbate while they read?
I did when I actually haven't done that much lately, but I did that a lot when I was 14, 15, and yes, when I was young.
Never understood that.
Loved
it's a very popular thing with women, and so are the those romance novels that you can find at the grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
They sell lots and lots of those. It's never been an activity of mine. I never understood how you could masturbate with one hand and read with the other one anyway.
Well, I have actually received, it has been given me as a compliment that my book can be read with one hand. So, hey, whatever. Hey, it's also on Kindle. That's a great way to read with one hand.
Well, there you go. Yeah, exactly. Or you can get an audio book and then it could just talk to you while you...
Yeah. So I grew up with all this great idea of all this kinky, freaky, wonderful stuff, and then there was my life, and as they say, ne'er the twain did meet. There, what was going on in my head was so completely relegated to the world of fantasy that I never even considered that I could possibly have any part of that in my real life until I started discovering these alternative worlds. I actually broke up with, although I will say this, I broke up with my second fiancé because we were in the car and I said, hey, your 35th birthday is coming up. Oh, I'll have to, or his 34th was coming up. And I said, don't worry, for your 35th birthday, I'll get you another woman and we'll do a threesome. And he said, oh, no, I could never share you with anyone. And I said, what? Every red-blooded male's favorite fantasy is two women. And he said, no, I could never share you at all. And I immediately started thinking, okay, how am I going to get out of this? Because there's no way that I am willing to give up the possibility of ever trying out being with a woman. It's just something I wanted to have the ability to try if I ever chose to go there. And it's a good thing that we broke up. Wonderful man, fabulous guy. He's happily married now. Yay for him. So am I. But I have a husband who is even more non-monogamous than I am.
So how does that now work? You know, a lot of our listeners, it might sound like an attractive fantasy for them. But they would wonder, how are they going to actually make that happen? How does that work? A lot of people worry that they'll be jealous, that they're going to lose their partner. Mm-hmm. How do you consult with your clients?
Well, I mean, I'll tell them straight, you probably will be jealous. And I can't speak to whether you will or won't lose your partner, but you definitely probably will be jealous. And then you get to deal with it. One of the great things about alternative relationship styles is that they will bring up your insecurities, your fears, your own personal drama will show up. And if you're willing to do the personal work and to take responsibility for your own stuff and to process it, it can make all of the relationships in your life so much stronger. Shall I give you a personal example of
jealousy? Oh, absolutely. Please do.
Okay. So one of my boyfriends in Washington, D.C., the first one with whom I investigated the realm of swinging. And swinging, just for anyone who's not aware, swinging is primarily sharing sexual partners. So I had my boyfriend, and then we had sexual experiences with other people, either when we were together or when we were apart. There are lots of different ways that people do it, and actually there's a Swinging 101 workshop that I do that is available, streamable, through the Kink Academy and PassionateYou.com. So
okay.
That's a great place. If anyone wants to know about that, that's a great place to find it. So one of these times, this is about the second time we were with another couple, we walked into the room. We were at the swingers club, and we took over one of the bedrooms. We walked into the room, and instantly he was making out with her. And something in me went, oh! I got tight in my chest, and my brow furrowed, and I felt tension in the back of my head. And for me, I was like, jealous, loss, some sort of fear.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I could have said, hold on, we just got to slow down for a minute, I got to work this out. But at the time, I decided that having recognized that this was going on, it was okay, I could manage it, and I could deal with it later. So So we continued to play with each other, and I was very proud of him because, you know, I discovered through swinging that I'm very proud of my partner when I'm watching them with someone else. Like, get her, make her scream, yay! You know, I really turn into a sexual cheerleader. And I enjoy seeing them enjoy themselves with other people. So we ended that experience, and I got to really look at what had been going on. And what had shown up for me was this feeling of being left behind. It was almost that what that sensation and that feeling reminded me of was, right, like I said, being left behind. Like he forgot about me. Like he walked into the room and he was so excited about her and I was forgotten. Now, it doesn't mean that's true, but that was my experience of it. Now, here's the thing. My emotional response is not his, it's not about him. That's about me. I had the thought that I had been forgotten. So I had that feeling that goes with being forgotten. So what I did was I said, okay, I tell you what can we do differently that will negate this and, you know, mitigate this in the next time? How about if from here out, as soon as we walk into the room, I need you to start with me. I need you to hug me, kiss me, just spend a minute really being close with me. And then you can go play with whomever else we're with. And then when we're done, could you come back to me and just spend another couple minutes just hugging and cuddling and kind of reconnecting with me? Would that be fine? And he was like, yeah, totally. Great, no problem. And that took care of it. Because then I never had to worry about being feeling left out.
Like you were left out, right. And mm-hmm. Did he have any negative feelings come up around swinging, too? Or was it just easy for him?
For him, I'm trying to remember. I'm sure that there were, on occasion, difficulties. Everyone is different. We did a lot of processing together. That was one of the things is on our drive up to the club, we had about a 45-minute drive to the club. So we would talk about what do we want to do tonight? You know, and we would set our agreements. So, okay, how are we feeling? Do we feel like we want to sleep with some people tonight or do we want to just hang out and have drinks? And if we were in different places, maybe he was like, he wanted to play with someone and I was really feeling very chill, then, you know, I might, at that point, maybe I'm comfortable saying, well, you know what, tell you what, let's see who it is, let's see how it goes, come talk to me when you meet someone that you're really interested in, and I'll see how I'm feeling. And we would really kind of negotiate in advance what we wanted to do and what our expectations were so that he could say he was interested and he could know that he'd been heard, and vice versa. As opposed to, again, assuming, oh, we're going to go to the club and we're going to have a good time. What does have a good time mean?
Right. So what does that mean? And how? So
you know,
people need to sit down and have a conversation about what have
yeah.
a good time means.
Right.
Yeah.
Does that mean flirting? Does that mean, you know, for some people, going out to a club and flirting would be huge. Just be flirting, being okay with flirting with other people. And I recommend that people start slowly. You don't say, let's step into this world of swinging and expect that you're just going to jump right into bed with the first people that come along and everything will be perfectly fine. Start slowly, especially if you're anxious. Go at the pace of the slower, least comfortable partner. If your primary relationship is important to you, you get to honor that by going at the pace of the slower partner. And so, again, just flirting might be fine because it's going to bring stuff up. Like, wow, how did I feel about you flirting with other people? Wow, I realized that I kind of felt like I was afraid that I was going to lose you, like I was threatened. And so maybe if someone's feeling threatened, there's more reassurance that needs to take place. Well, don't you realize how gorgeous I think you are, how much I love you? You're so primary to me. The fact that you're even willing to check this out with me is so very special. I would never, you know, maybe there's some more reassurance that needs to happen.
Hmm. You know,
and
I think one of the things
process.
Very interesting about both kinky and poly communities mm-hmm. is how much more communication takes place.
Oh, yes.
So that there is a lot more touching bases around feelings and boundaries and what's okay, what's not okay. A lot more negotiation that has to take place.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas your average vanilla relationship is, you know, or monogamous relationship is often has all these huge gaps between talking and doing, or you know, well, we've never spoken about that, or that's just how we've always done it, and very little insight on the relationship dynamics itself. So
there's and one of the things, there's two things I want to say. You mentioned the word boundaries, so I want to come back to boundaries. But I also want to say, in regards to communication, that's absolutely my experience too, is I have learned so much about how to communicate effectively since I got into kink and swinging and consensual non-monogamy. That's definitely one of the tricks that you have to learn. And there's also a lot more personal responsibility. I'm responsible for my feelings. My partner is not. My jealousy is not actually about him. It's about my response to whatever's going on in the situation right now. There's a lot more personal responsibility taken in a multiple situation, at least in what I've seen. Just because it doesn't last very effectively for very long if you blame everybody else every time you get uncomfortable or you get upset. Because we're specifically in these lifestyles, we're really putting ourselves into such very challenging situations. And we know going in, this is going to be a challenge. I can actually count on the fact I'm going to be jealous. Something's going to happen, and I'm going to be upset. We're going to have a miscommunication. You can just count on it. So when it happens, it's not a surprise. You actually knew it was going to come. And one of those things is boundaries. One of the ways that we often find boundaries is by tripping over them. I think everything's fine.
It's great.
And then all of a sudden,
right, tripping over them.
Yep. And then we realize, yeah, I wasn't ready for this. Okay, now I get to take a step back. Additionally, we make mistakes. You've got to forgive yourself and you've got to forgive your partners, because how can I expect him to have honored a boundary that I didn't know I had? You know, if I didn't know that I had it, then I certainly wasn't able to communicate it to him.
Right. So you have to be more introspective and more self-aware.
You got to be willing to do the work to take, you know, be the one in charge of what you feel and willing to figure it out and source it out on this end. Now, at the same time, it's completely valid to make a request of one's partner to back off for a little bit while I process something intense. Like, I am feeling a lot of jealousy, and I'm willing to do the work on that and to look inside myself and figure out what's behind that. In the meantime, though, could you maybe only go on one date every 2 weeks, for a month or so, so I can really process this? I know a lot of couples who are non-monogamous and then go through periods where they're like, no, we're going to be monogamous for a while, and we're going to build our, you know, really work on ourselves and be with each other and really work on this stable foundation that we have, and then we'll branch back out again. It's very common.
One quick question here. Kara's research, little difficulty with that link I put out there. So some of our listeners are complaining now. So,
oh, no.
What? So it was K-A-R-A-S?
Nope. C-A-R.
That is probably the problem here. So
The first word is community.
There we go. Community Academic Consortium for Research on Alternative Sexualities.
There you go.
Well, my apologies to the listeners out there. One letter off. So I'll read
it. It happens.
That.
Sounds the same. So.
Yes.
Yeah, they're a really great organization. Not only are they willing to work with researchers to help make sure that their research is not only scientifically valid, but also valuable for the community. But they also promote doing research on these alternative lifestyle communities. They're a great group. I was involved with them when I was in Washington, D.C.
It looks phenomenal. But do they actually make the files available to the public? Or?
You know, it's very simple to become a subscriber. And once one is a subscriber, I think it's very reasonable fee-wise also, then you have access to all kinds of information. Right.
Yeah. So I'm looking at the clock, and believe it or not, this has just flown by.
We've had fun.
We have, and I thought you might like to use the last couple of minutes to tell the audience a little bit about your book and how they can get a copy of it.
Sure. My book is a, if you remember the Choose Your Own Adventure style books that came out in the 80s, what it is it actually starts a story in the first person. You, the reader, are the main character. And then you get to make a choice. And it's, you know, if you want to go talk to this person, turn to page 4. And if you want to talk to that person, turn to page 7. So the choice that you make determines how the story progresses. And it actually branches out into 48 unique endings. Some of them are silly and funny, and some of them are 6-page sex scenes. There are all kinds. Some of them are challenging. So there are 4 different branches that the story basically works out into. One of them is more traditional, and then one of them is entirely about swinging. And
so
one of them is
kind of an interactive book in some way.
Absolutely. One of them is kinky, and another one is the standard indecent proposal. And you get to choose. So the choices that you make determine what happens. And I really wrote it as a way to be a very safe, non-threatening method for people to investigate their desires and different sexual engagements and situations that they might not have tried on in the real world. And you can really find out what you enjoy and what you really are not finding appealing. And you can look at why. Like, okay, well, what is it about this that really turns me on so much? Maybe this is a conversation that I could have with my partner. Hey, read this. What do you
right.
think about that?
And they can
it's
get a copy of this. What's the website that they should be going to?
Well, it's actually myeroticadventure.com.
There you go.
Yeah, and you can read a section of the book there and holler at me if you have any questions.
That sounds like a brand new type of book. It really does.
You know, there aren't many of the... I have, when I wrote it, there were none others in print. There were no other ones in print. And yes, let's create lots of sales for this book to show my publisher that they should pick up a whole 4-book series.
All right.
That I've proposed.
All right, Mikhail, you're, I'm coming up to Portland. I hope I get to see you in a couple of... Well,
that'd be great.
It's going to be in like another month, but we'll have to hook up. And
that'd be wonderful.
Thank you so much. I've got your websites posted all over Facebook, so...
Thank you. Thanks for your time, Veronica.
You are just an unlimited supply of information.
I do my best, as are you.
Yes. All right. So,
good night.
Good luck. Once again, that book is My Erotic Adventure. And
that
the guest
is.
Tonight was Mikhail Newby. And I won't be here next week. I'm going to be treating you to another repeat, but... we'll be back the following week, and if you do happen to be in San Francisco next Monday, I'll be teaching a workshop at Good Vibrations. So you can check that out if you are a subscriber to my newsletter. It'll be going out, the announcement will be going out again tonight or tomorrow morning, and if not, I will post that on the Facebook page as well on Twitter, so good places to follow me. Thanks a bunch for tuning in.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with you. Sering kesepian, kenapa tak memutuskan berita?